Tonight is November the 22nd, and we are on page 238 in Parashas Miketz. The background is that the brothers had come back from Egypt, and they broke the news to Yaakov that not only were they treated harshly by the man in charge, who we know was Yosef, but they did not know was Yosef. But also, and also, he demanded that they bring Binyamin down with them, and he kept Shimon with him as a hostage. And so, Yaakov reacted very negatively and says he doesn't want to send down Binyamin, that here Yosef is gone, Shimon is now gone, and now you want to take Binyamin. He's not willing to do that. We explained last time that at this point, Yaakov begins to suspect the brothers, that until now he has believed Yosef to be dead, but not knowing why or how. Now, he suspects the brothers did away with Yosef. Now they have done away with Shimon, and they are conspiring to do away with Binyamin as well. He doesn't trust the brothers. Reuven tries to offer a deal for Yaakov. We pointed out that Reuven, being the one who is least guilty of all the brothers, because he's the one who tried to save Yosef, so Reuven tries to offer his father that he'd be willing to give up his own two sons if he can't bring Binyamin back. He will guarantee Binyamin's return, but Yaakov is not willing to do that. And that brings us to the beginning of Perek Mem Gimel, chapter 43, which is where we're up to. We had ended off last time by saying that we wanted to know what was going on in Yaakov's head. What was he thinking? That we know what Yosef was thinking. Yosef has this whole plan devised, which is working perfectly. He's the only one who is pleased because things are going the way they should be going. He's not pleased that his brothers are unhappy, but his plan is working out. The brothers, we know what they're thinking. They're thinking this is all a punishment from Hashem to them for having sold Yosef. And they're not sure what to do, but they're trying to go back to Egypt with Binyamin, at least to get Shimon out of jail. Yaakov, as we mentioned last time, and already mentioned this time once, Yaakov has now a suspicion that the brothers are, in fact, they're the ones who have gotten rid of Yosef and now got rid of Shimon. Apparently there's infighting amongst the brothers, and they are doing away with each other. So now we begin with Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, V'hara'av kaved ba'aretz, the famine was heavy in the land, V'yihi kasher kilu le'echol es ha'shever, it was when they finished eating the food, asher heviu mi'mitzrayim, that they had brought from Mitzrayim, V'yomar alehem aviyim, their father said to them, shuvu, return, shivru lanu me'at ochel, buy for us a little bit of food. We mentioned last time that what is Yaakov thinking right now? What is his plan? And this requires a great deal of thought. Yaakov, let's take the facts from his perspective. He sent the brothers down to get food. That was all. That was the reason why he sent the brothers. The brothers also had a double agenda. They also wanted to find Yosef and try to redeem him. But Yaakov's not aware of that. Yaakov, because Yaakov thinks Yosef is dead. So Yaakov's perspective is he sent the brothers to get food. There's a famine. This famine is an incredible famine. There's just terrible poverty and terrible, terrible suffering all around. And the only place that has food is Egypt, which is striking that Egypt should have food and no place else. And he sends the brothers to go get food from Egypt. That's all. He keeps Binyamin at home because he's afraid of losing Binyamin. The brothers go. They come back without Shimon. And the brothers are saying that we need to bring Binyamin back with us again. And they only bring enough food for a certain time frame, whatever, how much food they were able to bring up to save their families. But that's it. Yaakov doesn't want to send Binyamin again. As I mentioned, he's suspicious. And so he doesn't do it. Reuven offers to be the one to guarantee Binyamin's safe return. Yaakov says nothing doing, and he waits. Now he waits, because it's a heavy famine in the land, until they run out of food again. Now, they don't run out of food completely, but they run out of food to the point where if they don't go to Egypt now and get more food, then they may run out of food. And so he says, go back and get us more food. Now, what is Yaakov thinking? Until now, he didn't send the brothers. Why didn't he send the brothers until now?
Because they would only go with Binyamin.
Because they'll only go with Binyamin. And why won't he send Binyamin?
Because I'm Binyamin to be killed.
He suspects the brothers. So what is Yaakov thinking has changed when he tells them, go back and get more food? Something has to have changed. If he wasn't willing to do it, I don't know how long the food lasted. Let's, for argument's sake, say the food lasted 3 months. I have no idea. But let's just use the term the number three months so we can have a working number. So if 3 months ago he was unwilling to send Binyamin and the brothers, he didn't tell the brothers to go down without Binyamin. Now, 3 months later when the food has run out, he says, go back. Now the brothers are going to say back to him, how can we go back without Binyamin? Either send them or don't send them. What has Yaakov been thinking the whole time? Is Yaakov simply stuck his head in the ground? He's just not thinking. He's just hoping that things will change. Does Yaakov have the ostrich approach right now? Things are bad. The food is only going to last a certain amount of time. When it runs out, you're going to have to do something. Yaakov hasn't done anything, apparently, over this, let's say, 3 months until now. What is he thinking will change now?
Maybe he's watched how the brothers react towards each other and sees that they're not trying to hurt each other.
So okay. Okay, so you're saying that he was watching to see how they would act with each other. Okay. That's a nice suggestion, but however, if it were true, then he should be willing to send Binyamin right now, which he's not. Okay?
I was just thinking, in every famine, it brings forth sickness and death if it continues. And I was wondering if he thought maybe he was going to lose Binyamin anyway, or if anybody was
going to
get sick, and then he'd feel pressure.
Okay. I wouldn't say I wouldn't say it exactly how you're saying it, but the famine certainly is a factor over here. There's something about this famine that is definitely influencing Yaakov's decision making. There's no question about it.
The returned money, does that make it odd for anybody?
Yeah, well, that was the fear when they brought the money back.
So maybe Yaakov was thinking something, you know, with this money, because it just may have changed his thinking process, or at least not been comfortable with.
But what would have changed? What would have changed from the point where the brothers came back to now? No, there's no additional information. The Torah just skips ahead. It says the famine was heavy in the land. They ran out of food. He says, go back.
Maybe he was hoping the famine would end.
Okay, so maybe he was hoping the famine would end. Now that's an important factor. Maybe Yaakov was hoping the famine would end. That would change things, right? If the famine would end, then there'd be no need to take Binyamin down to Egypt. Binyamin would no longer be beholden the brothers would no longer be beholden to this man who was in charge of Egypt, who was demanding to see Binyamin. So that's a factor which is a variable. Perhaps the famine will end. So which really goes back to the question of, what did Yaakov think this famine was all about? See, the brothers, as we pointed out a few weeks ago, the brothers are looking at this famine as a means of punishing them. That they know they've sold Yosef down to Egypt. Yaakov doesn't know that. They know they did. And now, lo and behold, there's a famine, and the only place you can get food is Egypt. The brothers look at it as a way that Hashem is punishing them. And they go to Egypt with intention to save Yosef, and instead things go from bad to worse. And they say themselves, this is all because of our evil deed 22 years ago when we sold our brother. So the brothers are looking at this famine as a way of punishing them for how they acted with Yosef. But how is Yaakov looking at the famine? From an outsider's perspective, from our perspective of reading the Torah, we know the true reason of the famine is not what the brothers were thinking at all. What was the reason for the famine?
To fulfill Joseph's dream.
Okay, to fill the dreams, and which ultimately is to bring everybody, all the Jewish people, down to Mitzrayim. That's the purpose of this famine. The purpose of this famine is to get us into Egypt to begin to fulfill the prophecy that Avraham Avinu had back in the Bris Ben Habesarim, in the covenant with Hashem, that his children will be strangers in a land not their own, and they'll become slaves. That's what this famine is out to do. That's the purpose of the famine. What is Yaakov thinking is this famine all about? Alan?
Well, I was going to ask you something.
Go ahead.
About Maybe he sees also that all roads now are leading to Egypt.
Okay.
They're being pushed that way by circumstances.
So he sees that. He doesn't, I mean, is he thinking this has to do with the Bris Ben Habisarim? Remember, the covenant with Avram did not say Egypt. It just said a land not their own. He didn't know anything about Egypt. There was no reason for Yaakov to think Egypt over anywhere else. There's only one reason why anybody would think Egypt over every. There's only one reason why Yaakov might have thought Egypt over anywhere else.
And that's, knew the brothers.
No, because they're the only ones that had food.
No, I know that. But I'm saying, irrespective of this story, when Hashem said to Avraham Avinu, your children will be strangers in a land not their own, and it's not clear which land it will be, it turns out it's Egypt. But they did know that earlier in history, Avraham had gone to Egypt because of a
famine.
Mm-hmm. So there is a precedent that a famine leads to Egypt. There is that precedent.
Yaakov knows there's no such thing as an accident or a coincidence.
Correct.
So now he must plain be thinking, because these things are happening. Mm-hmm. What he's thinking, you know, could be leading to the fact that maybe he does have some idea that his son isn't dead.
Okay. We asked at the end last week, somebody brought it up, why doesn't Yaakov himself go down to Egypt?
Because he's 137?
It's true, he's 130 years old, but his being 130 years old, right? But that's a possibility. It's a possibility that he was not up to the traveling. That's possible. Another possibility is that, as we pointed out a few months ago already, that when Parashas Vayeshev started, there's a transition from Yaakov to the brothers, where history had been shaped by our Avos and Imahos, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, until Parshas Vayeshev. When Parshas Vayeshev starts, it's now the brothers' show. It's their show. Really, already in Parshas Vayishlach, we have some control exerted by the brothers. That's with the story of Shechem, with Shimon and Levi destroying the whole city, etc. But here, Parshas Vayeshev is when the brothers really take over the scene. That's where the spotlight shifts from the patriarchs to the brothers. And it could be Yaakov understood that there's a new world order, and it's not his place to take an active role. That it's the brothers who have to shape history. It's their show, and they have to make the best of it. It could be that's why he didn't go. But I speculate, that perhaps Yaakov didn't go because Yaakov also suspects that this famine may be bringing about the prophecy of ending up strangers, slaves, in a land not their own. Perhaps Yaakov is thinking that. If Yaakov is thinking that, then the last thing he wants to do is go to Egypt, because that would make it happen. See, as long as Yaakov is in Israel and not in Egypt, then the prophecy can't take place, or at least it can be delayed. It doesn't actually happen until we know historically what happens. The brothers go back, Yosef reveals himself, and then Yosef sends for his father and the whole family to come down to Egypt. That's how they end up in Egypt. The Gemara tells us, that really, Yosef and Yaakov share a very close relationship, and many of the things that happened to Yaakov happened to Yosef. Yaakov was hated by his brother. Yosef was hated by his brothers. Yaakov Yaakov had a certain special status about him. He was, and so did Yosef. There were a lot of similarities between them. They looked alike. One of the things the Gemara says is that based on the prophecy that Avraham Avinu had, Yaakov should have been dragged to Egypt in chains. But instead, that was fulfilled through Yosef. When Yosef was sold, therefore dragged to Egypt in chains, that took the place of Yaakov. And now Yaakov was able to come down in a regular, nice way with the proper wagons, etc., that would bring him down later on, with all kinds of an entourage and honor. Yaakov may be thinking over here, not knowing that Yosef was taken down to Egypt, rather thinking Yosef was dead, he may be thinking that if he's to leave and go down to Egypt, that may hasten the process of becoming slaves. So he doesn't want to leave. But he may understand that this famine, ultimately the purpose of which is to bring him down to Egypt. It could be that he's waiting because he wants to see what will happen with the famine, as was mentioned before. If he can stall, maybe the famine will end. Maybe this is not the famine that will trigger the slavery. Maybe this is not that time. And if it isn't, you don't want to let it happen. So he's trying to wait and see what happens. That's one idea. There's another idea here, but somebody had a question? Yeah.
Would there have been a time when the brothers would have thought, knowing the nevuah that that Abraham had, that they were sort of off the hook because here they're helping the prophecy to come true?
I don't think that anybody here feels good about helping the prophecy. Because the anytime there's a negative prophecy, even if it has to happen, you don't want it to happen quickly. There's also a prophecy doesn't have to be so rigid in its interpretation. The prophecy was vague to Avraham Avinu, and in fact, we know how vague it was. Even in the way it was carried out, it was not carried out exactly the way it could have been carried out. It said 400 years, but we know 400 years is counted from the birth of Yitzchak. Because it doesn't say they'll be slaves in Egypt. It says they'll be a slave in a land not their own. And even at that time, Eretz Canaan was not their own. And so 190 of the 400 years were carried out in Israel. So things are vague. We have the classic example where Yonah tells the city of Nineveh that in another 40 days, Nineveh will be Nehet Paches. Nineveh will be overturned. The implication is like Sodom was overturned and destroyed. And that's what would have happened had they not done Teshuvah. When they did Teshuvah, the prophecy still was fulfilled by it being overturned spiritually, that they did Teshuvah. And they became new people. That's what the Gemara says, that the word Ne'apachas, to be overturned, can be taken several ways. So you don't want to fulfill the prophecy in the most negative way. So I don't think anybody would feel good about that. But there's another more practical side to this whole thing. Remember, Yaakov suspects the brothers now that they may be up to no good. How will he know for certain if they're up to no good or not? Well, if he turns around when they have food and says, go down to Egypt, and the brothers refuse, they all say, we're not going unless you send Binyamin. Well, that doesn't prove anything, because the brothers want to take Binyamin. Maybe they want to take him because their story is true, because there's this man down there who says, I won't give you food unless you give me Binyamin. Or maybe they want to take Binyamin because they're up to no good and they want to do away with Binyamin. So there's no way to know. But if they run out of food, and then he says to them, go down to Egypt, well, their lives are at stake now. His life is at stake. Their lives are at stake. Their family's lives are at stake. Their wives, their children, everybody's lives are at stake. You don't play games when people's lives are at stake. So if he's going to now give them an ultimatum, go down to Egypt, not just an ultimatum, a command, go down to Egypt, and they're still going to insist on Binyamin, and they're going to refuse to go unless he sends Binyamin, that will prove the veracity of their story. Then the reason why they want Binyamin is precisely because of what they said, because they can't get the food without Binyamin. Had it been simply because they were out to no good, then they would have relented with this Binyamin business when it comes down to life and death. So Yaakov is waiting to see. At the same time, Yehuda has the same plan in mind, but from the brother's perspective. Rashi tells us that when Yaakov refused to let them go after Reuven's request, Yehuda said to them, wait. Hold on. Wait till the food runs out. Then we'll get Binyamin. Yehuda also knows that when it comes down to life and death, Yaakov will have no choice but to send Binyamin. Both Yaakov and the brothers are aware that if you wait till it's a life and death situation, then everybody's got to be up front. Everybody's got to be above board. Everybody's lives are at stake. You can't play games anymore. And so Yaakov is waiting, and the brothers are waiting. Maybe the famine will end, but if it doesn't end, then at that moment when you got to go now, and if you don't go now, everybody's going to die, then everybody's going to start telling the truth. And the brothers are not going to change their story, which is going to prove to Yaakov that they're telling the truth. And that's why, as we're about to see, when Yaakov tries to send them again and they refuse without Binyamin, now Yaakov questions them and says, why did this happen? Why did you let this happen? Why? Now he gets into the details of their story. He didn't get into the details of the story when we read it last week, because last week he didn't trust them. He didn't believe the whole story. He suspected it was all a lie. But now, when the brothers say the story again, when it's down to the wire, then he believes them. And now he wants to know more details, as we'll see. So let's read a few more psukim here. Verse Gimel. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Vayomer Elav Yehuda Lemar. Yehuda said to him as follows. Ha'ed he'id banu ha'ish lemar. The man warned us. And he uses a double language, ha'ed he'id, which is always for emphasis. He who strongly warned us. How can they say sternly warned us, okay? Lo siru fana, you will not see my face. Viltiachichem itchem, without your brother with you. You won't get an audience. You won't even get the time of day down here in Egypt if you don't have your brother with you. Im yeshcha mishaleach esachinu itanu, if you send our brother with us, nerdav v'nishbra lecha ochel, we will go down and we will buy for you food. V'meincha mishaleach, who's Yehuda talking to?
Yaakov.
Yaakov is his father. And this is what the son, Yehuda, says to the father. V'meincha mishaleach, dad, if you don't send Binyamin, lo neired, we're not going to go down. Ki ha'ish amar eleinu, for the man said to us, lo siru fana, you will not see my face, b'ltiachichem itchem, unless your brother is with you. How can Yehuda directly disobey his father? Yehuda was a tremendous tzaddik. He certainly kept the laws of kibud of honoring one's father, meticulously. You're not allowed to directly disobey your father. That's prohibited. How does he have a right to do that?
His life was at stake. What do you say?
Explain.
If he went without Binyamin,
right,
then Yosef could do something to them.
Okay.
Therefore, their life is in danger.
Good.
And if their life is in danger, they are allowed.
There's a more basic way the life's in danger. What's that?
No food.
No food. They're going to start with that. If you send Binyamin with us, we will go. If you don't send Binyamin with us, we're not going to go. How can you disobey your father? So the rule is, you can't disobey your father under normal circumstances unless your parent, father or mother, unless your parent is asking you to do something which is against the Torah. Parent says to a child, eat non-kosher food. The child is not only allowed to, but must disobey their parent. If a father asks a child to do something which will cause loss of life, the child is required to disobey. Says Yehuda to his father, if you send Binyamin, then of course we're going to go. You said to go, and we have to listen. And of course we're going to go down. If you don't send Binyamin, you are causing a loss of life. We can't go. Now, so you'll argue, but if we stay, people are also going to die. First of all, if they stay, they may be able to help out a little bit with the situation at home. But second of all, maybe Yaakov will change his mind. See, once they leave the house, there's no cell phones. Once they leave the house, they're gone. There's no way to know that Yaakov would change his mind. Yehuda says, this is not a question of doubt. It's not a question of, we'll go down there, and then maybe Yosef will allow us to buy food. No. He said, absolutely not. There will be no food without Binyamin. And therefore, it is certain death for you, for us, for our wives, for our children, if you don't send Binyamin. And therefore, we will not go down without him. When Yaakov hears this, he understands that Yehuda is telling the truth. That it is the truth that Binyamin is the pawn that is necessary to get the food. And that's why now he turns around and he says, Vayomer Yisrael, Pasuk Vav, verse 6, Yisrael said, Lo maharei osem li, why did you do bad to me? Lehagib lo ish, to tell the man, ha'od lachem ach, that you have another brother. Why did you do that? Why'd you talk so much? Why'd you say so much? You were going to buy food, for heaven's sake. Why'd you have to tell him you were going to buy food? Yeah, but we have this brother and he's at home. Why'd you mention it? Who asked you? Why did it all come up? So as I pointed out to you, why didn't Yaakov ask them this before? Because before he didn't believe the story. Now he believes the story, so now he wants to know, so how did it happen? If it really did happen, well, how'd you let it happen? You're not foolish. He knows his sons are smart men. Well, how'd you let this happen?
Dina mentioned last time changing the Lashon because until now it's Yaakov and now it's Israel.
Excellent. Okay, so we are going to get back to that. Okay, thank you for reminding me. We will get back to that. What's that?
What did you ask?
That the name...
Dina mentioned last time that the name of Yaakov Avinu, until now it's Yaakov, and all of a sudden it's just back to Israel.
Now it uses Israel instead of Yaakov.
But I was going to ask another question.
Go
ahead. Okay, so we're talking about the famine, but what about Shimon? Who's
right.
Also stuck there.
Right.
And you know, as a father, I would be concerned about my other son who's there, and who knows what's happening to him.
So
I understand what you said about Yaakov not wanting to go down there himself, because it seems like if he goes down with Binyamin and the brothers, they'll never come back.
Right, that's right.
So he's going to be there in Mitzrayim, and he doesn't want that. He just, you know. So,
With Shimon, Yaakov, there's two possibilities. Either the brother story is correct, that Shimon is being held prisoner, or there's something more sinister going on, and they killed him. Well, if they killed him, there's nothing that can be done about it. He's gone. If he's sold, or he's being held prisoner, so he's being held prisoner, which is not a pleasant way to be, but at least he's alive. If he sends Binyamin with the brothers, he's afraid they're going to kill him. So he's not able to do anything about Shimon until now.
Yeah, I understand that. But if he goes with Binyamin and the brothers, if Yaakov goes with them, I understand that he's afraid that once he goes down there, they'll never come back. So that may be, but at least he'll be there with all of his sons, including Shimon.
Right, provided that their story was true. Right, that's provided that Shimon is in fact there and alive and not murdered. So he doesn't know. This is part of the reason that's, you know, the waiting was to verify the story. So he says, why did you tell him? Why did you talk so much? Some of the Mefarshim, some of the commentaries point out from here that one of the lessons to take from this, this is really a side point to the whole story, but a lesson to take from this for the ages is that when you're at a disadvantage, you're in a foreign country and at the mercy of a foreign government, etc., don't talk so much. There's no reason to give away more information than you have to. There's no reason, because the information can and will be held against you. So that we learn from here that in dealing with these sorts of situations, keep the information to a minimum and don't divulge more than you have to. Vayomru. And they said, Sha'ol Sha'al Ha'ish, the man asked, and again using the double language, it's for emphasis. He asked, meaning he asked all kinds of questions. Lanu, about us, Ulemo Ladatenu, and about our children. Lamar saying, Ha'ud Avichem Chai, is your father still alive? Hayesh Lachem Ach, do you have another brother? The man asked us all kinds of questions, and we pointed out that Yosef very skillfully wove the conversation in a way, he directed the conversation in a way that he was able to get in these questions and get the brothers to say more than they wanted to say. We told him, based on these questions that he asked, we answered, I mean, he's in charge, he asked those questions, we had to answer. Could we possibly have known, Kiyomar, that he would say, Horidu asafichem, bring down your brother? How would we have known he would have done this? There's no way we would have known that. And we had no intention of divulging all this information, but he forced it out of us. Which is why the brothers interpreted this as a punishment for what they did to Yosef. Because it was unusual that the viceroy of Egypt was going to ask them questions about their family and about their father. And what is this business? Like we're going to see later on, when Yehuda says to Yosef, why do you want Binyamin? he's going to say to him, what, were we trying to marry your daughter? Were you trying to marry our sister? Like, well, what is this business you had to ask these questions? What is it relevant to that you had to ask these questions? So they recognized that Yosef was asking questions that were not appropriate for the situation. They interpreted it as a sign from God that he was punishing them, that he was putting words in his mouth. And that's what they're explaining to Yaakov over here. This was strange, and we had to answer. We had no idea he was going to say, bring Binyamin down.
You had a question.
Yeah.
You
were
asking the same question.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I made this point last week, and you're defeating me. But still, in page 235, look at verse 10 and 12. They say we are Christian people, we have never been spies, we've come to bring food, and Joseph says, no, you're a spy.
Mm-hmm.
They say, we are your servants, 12 brothers, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
I mean, it's not, he didn't elicit it from them, they just said it.
Yeah, the Ramban explains that he asked these questions over there.
He what?
He asked other questions. It was back and forth over there. But we explained then how it happened. We explained the fine print at the time, how one question led to another question.
Okay.
That was a game of chess back then. That's what we showed back then, that the brothers and Yosef were playing chess, but Yosef had the winning, Yosef had
upper hand.
Because Yosef had all the answers. He knew before they had to say it. Right? Now, Rashi says over here a fascinating thing, that when Yosef was questioning them, then and they said he asked about us and about our families, the Medrash says, Afilu, can't read this word here, even what had to do with our cribs, he revealed to us. Which means Yosef knew so much information, he was able to ask things that had to do with babies, with children, that there's no way, he was able to ask questions that got them to talk about things that they never would have talked about. How many kids they have, and how old are they, you know, where do they go to school, well, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, he asked them all kinds of questions that there was no way, he knew too much. Yosef knew too much. Now, we pointed out in previous weeks that the way it was going, there was so much information that Yosef already knew that it would have been surprising to find out that Yosef was not Yosef. These would have indicated to someone who had any reason to believe it that this was Yosef. But we showed that it was impossible for them to think that way because Yosef was a slave. And if you're a slave, you don't become the viceroy of Egypt. It was unheard of, impossible, unfathomable for that to happen. And that's why they never put two and two together that this could possibly be Yosef.
Mm-hmm. He must have also looked considerably different.
Yes, well that we know already from before, right. That, as an adult, because he left them as a 17-year-old. And now he's a 39-year-old. When he left them, they were already in their 20s, so they already looked like adults. But he looked different.
But 17 back then would be...
Rashi said that
17 than ours.
That's true, but the Gemara says that he was not Chasima Zakan. He didn't have a beard yet. So, and now he did. So he looked different.
Covering.
Yeah.
He wrinkles.
I don't know, 39...
Was Yosef a lot of wear, like the stuff that Paul...
What do you mean?
Didn't Paul wear Getschkes or something?
He did not wear anything that was an Avodah Zarah, that was an idol. He did wear royal garb, but he didn't wear Avodah Zarah. So so they said, we didn't know he was going to do this. And now we're going to have Yehuda speak up. But before we talk about Yehuda, who's going to now step in, and from this moment forward, Yehuda is going to take the bull by the horns. This next Pasuk Ches, verse 8, is when Yehuda finally asserts himself and assumes the position of leader of all the brothers. This is where it happens. Where before it could have happened, and the first time he asserted himself was in the sale of Yosef. That was the first time Yehuda actually asserted himself, and that led to his downfall. When he did that, and then the brothers saw the pain that it put their father through, they demoted Yehuda. They did not pay attention to him. He became just like any of the other brothers. He lost his position of being the most authoritative of the brothers. That happened, and that's the whole story of Yehuda and Tamar happened because of that. Here, this next Pasuk Ches, verse 8, is when Yehuda regains his place And from here he never loses it. At this point forward, he becomes the leader of the Jewish people. And that, of course, is as the ancestor of David HaMelech, is his rightful place. He is the position of royalty. But we'll get to that in a moment. Before that, let's address Dina's point that why, until now, Yaakov's name is Yaakov, and then all of a sudden over here it says, Vayomer Yisrael. In Pasuk Vav, in verse 6, Yisrael said. Why Yisrael? And in fact, in Pasuk Ches, again, the one we're about to read, Yehuda says it. Yehuda speaks to Yisrael. Why Yisrael? Now, we've pointed out in the past that the difference between the name Yaakov and the name Yisrael is Yaakov is local. Yaakov is family. Yaakov is when you're dealing with him, his wives, his brother, their brothers, his sons, something which has to do with the here and now of the story at hand, his name is Yaakov. That's his regular name. Yisrael is the name that's eternal. Yisrael is the name that's historic, that spans the years. That's Yisrael. That's a word called B'nai Yisrael. Yisrael is the name that is used when something very important is happening, not just for then, but forever. When finally the brothers have proven their story to be correct, or shown that their story is correct, and now we're about to get into the point where Yaakov is going to send the brothers down, the brothers are going to go down to Egypt and not come back until they find Yosef. This sending to Egypt is going to be the one that's going to trigger that not only will Binyamin come back alive, not only will Shimon get out of jail, but Yosef will be discovered. And not only will he be discovered, he'll be discovered in a position of power, as the viceroy of Egypt, as the one who's calling the shots. Things are about to be totally turned on their head, which is going to then bring everybody down to Egypt, which will begin the process of becoming slaves, which is the next step, and then the Exodus, and then, of course, getting the Torah. This is where things begin to be set in motion. From this moment forward, we are now moving into high gear in the story of the Jews migrating from Eretz Canaan to Eretz Mitzrayim, and then, of course, coming back. So that's why the name changes to Yisrael. Now we've moved into a new realm in the history of what's happening. And so from here on in, the name Yisrael is used, and we're going to find it over and over again. And at this point forward, the question will be, when the name Yaakov is used, why would the name Yaakov be used? Until now, as long as the name Yaakov is used, that was normal, and Yisrael was the question. The rule was Yaakov, and Yisrael was the exception which needed to be explained. From here forward, Yisrael is the rule, and the exception is Yaakov, which will have to be explained. That's what we should keep in mind from here, this point forward.
So the name Yisrael given to him by Hashem?
Yes, that happened when he fought with the angel.
Okay.
Back in Parshas Vayishlach. That's what happened then. Okay, it is nearly 8 o'clock, so I don't want to go over time. I know there's a program right now for the women, so I don't want to go over time. So we are up to Pasuk Ches, verse 8, and as I said, this is where Yehuda is about to take the reins. And that's going to be from next week, Mitzvah Shem. So next week is going to be regular time, 7:30 on Sunday evening.